Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com.
Hey, I'm Jay from the Eagles Beak. I'm also presenter and producer of a community radio show, sports radio show on Meridian FM. You can get us on socials, the Meridian Sports Show, and also the Eagles Beak across all socials.
Hi, Kev. Thanks for having me back on again, and congratulations on your 10th season. It's been great fun to chat with you and all the other guests you've had on over the years. My name's Steve McGookin. I'm a Spurs fan from Belfast, but I'm currently in Baltimore, where I'm watching the Orioles make a run at the baseball postseason. So in a previous life, I was the chairman of the New York Spurs Supporters Club.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining me today, guys. And yeah, as Steve mentions, this is the first full episode of our 10th season here on the show, which we'll come back a little bit later in the rundown. But it's really been a pleasure and grateful for everyone that's listened and everyone that's come on. It's a really cool community that we've managed to build here. We'll start off with something that we did used to cover on the podcast, unfortunately not anymore, which is the Women's World Cup. The timing not so friendly for those of us on the mountain time zone, but I was curious to your guys' thoughts about how the tournament's gone this far and the US's surprising dismissal from the tournament today.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed the competition. A lot of football, a lot of decent football. Obviously, we've had we haven't had as many sort of one-sided games in the early stages. We've seen some big names drop out: Germany, USA today, Canada. All falling by the wayside in the group stages, and looking forward to seeing England play in their knockout game tomorrow, which isn't going to be easy by any feat. Playing Nigeria, it's going to be a tough game. So looking forward to that tomorrow morning. But yeah, it's been really competitive. Obviously, I know it's a difficult time for you guys in the States to watch games, but it's been morning games for us here in the UK. And I've really enjoyed it. It's always good to have a competition where you get a few surprises here. And obviously, USA losing earlier on today against Sweden in the manner of losing the game, penalties is one thing, but for it to go to VAR as well, and a lot of confusion taking place, that's got to sting. I mean, USA going for their third World Cup in a row. I think the non-USA supporting fans watching the World Cup are probably relatively pleased that USA aren't going to go for a third one. It gives somebody else a chance to win the World Cup at least. But it opens up a fair bit. USA haven't played that well, let's face it, in this competition. There's been a few teams stuttering along the way. France have stuttered. Germany really did stutter and obviously ended up coming home. And England, they're a tight game to start off with. Heavily criticised in the press over here for that difficult start. But, like we saw in the Men's World Cup, Argentina lost their first game and ended up winning it. So, we know these competitions, you kind of grow into them. They're a long way from home, most of these teams, particularly England. Acclimatisation is a big thing. But growing into the tournament like they have, I think tomorrow's going to be really interesting to see how they fare against Nigeria. Obviously, excelling against China in that last group game, probably more than most people expected them to, but their game really came together. And I think going to the World Cup, England particularly, with a number of big names missing, we're talking players that would walk into that first 11. I think it affected them more than people realised. And obviously, losing Ciara Walsh in the group stage as well. Thankfully, she's probably going to make it back into the team. But, you know, who do you drop from that side against China? So, yeah, really looking forward to the game tomorrow. It's been, you know, these knockout stages have been good so far as well. There's some really tight games coming up as well. And some surprising teams into the next round. So yeah, USA are gone, Canada are gone, Germany have gone. So looking forward to seeing some more surprises along the way. And hopefully the draw opens up a little bit more and, yeah, we get a few more surprises.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think it has been a really entertaining tournament. And again, the evenness, the sense of evenness is there. Obviously, I got up this morning to watch the U.S. Women's team go out after extra time and penalties. And I obviously, you know, as Jay says, penalties are a hugely disappointing way to go out of any tournament. But, you know, there's a reason the game ends up there, and that's basically because one side or the other wasn't able to take the opportunities they had during the previous 120 minutes. And you know, the U.S. team had a lackluster start to the tournament. Let's be fair. So you got a sense that, you know, they were going to be vulnerable today, whether or not they were, you know, playing to their potential or not. And, you know, they were better in the second half for sure, trying to break down a very well organized Swedish team. But no matter how much possession they had or the chances that they created, they couldn't get the ball over the line. So, you know, they ended up in the lottery of a shootout. The thing, and there's been some, you know, controversy and chat about the controversial nature of VAR being used in the final goal. But the thing that surprised me the most, I think, and I don't know if this was in the broadcast in the rest of the world or just here, was that there was no camera angle from above the goal line like there is in the Premier League, like we're used to with regular VAR. And then it emerged that there actually was, but we just weren't shown it. It wasn't in the broadcast. When we eventually got to see the VAR replay, and I only saw it online after the game broadcast had finished, not in the broadcast itself. It was a fair decision, and you know, the ball was over the line, and those are the breaks. But again, you know, it created a little bit of controversy on Twitter and social media for people who were probably more invested in it than I was. But I mean, subsequently, there's been lots of criticism of plenty of people since the game. And I admit I don't know enough about it to weigh in, you know, on the personality side one way or the other. But it seems this is probably a good time for a reassessment and some change. I mean, they have the advantage of having a very good, solid core of young players. But it seems like the defeat here, and as Jay said, I mean, thank goodness somebody else is going to win it this year. it does seem like an inflection point, I think it did with the men's team, especially when they're the hosts of, or one of the hosts of the 2026 Men's World Cup, and they rehired Greg Berhalter as coach recently, and the challenge for them is going to be, well, you know, that if you're just preparing by a series of friendlies rather than in a competitive group, you know, does that take the edge off? But as far as the rest of the women's tournament is concerned, I think the entertain from an entertainment perspective, any of the teams left in it really could go on to win it. I think the Dutch look really good in the games I've seen them play, and we saw this morning that, you know, Sweden are really resilient and very well organized. But it just seems pretty wide open. So I'm excited to watch the England team tomorrow, and best of luck to England's women. So, I've enjoyed the tournament so far, and I know you guys have too. So everything's a positive.
Yep, some excellent points made by both of you there. Would have been cool for the U.S. to advance from my personal, obviously biased perspective, but I get two teams every World Cup, and as long as the Dutch are still in it, then I still have a path there. Obviously, World Cup's typically a summer affair, unlike the men's one last year, but as we transition from that into the domestic seasons, it's time to get going for the 2023-2024 Premier League campaign. Obviously, before any new season, there are some rule changes, just some that people should be aware of. There are likely going to be 5 Champions League spots for England because it's based on coefficients, so it isn't guaranteed, but it is very probable. There's going to be the World Cup style of extra time. So the watch stops for goal celebrations and subs and injury delays. Goalkeepers can no longer intend to distract or interfere with penalty takers. So we won't get to see that really cool, like, shadow penalty taker thing happening where, like, somebody picks up the ball, everybody yells at him for 2 minutes, and then he hands it to the guy that's actually going to take it. There's going to be an increased focus on manager etiquette, so there won't be as much yelling at officials, in theory, and only one person in the technical area, not, like, four assistants and the manager. There's going to be a focus on reducing crowding of the referee, which obviously we all see all the time, and technically shifted last year, but it's finally in the rule books this year. That if a defender touches a ball that winds up going to an offside player, they are still offside. So some big changes, some of them in theory small changes that could have big impacts. Which of these do you think will have the most impact on the coming season?
I mean, to be honest, most of these, I think a lot of people have been crying out for a while. I mean, particularly the referees one in terms of, you know, the etiquette from both the players, no crowd and the referee. I mean, you see that every game, 10 times a game, probably more. And the manager etiquette as well. We had a few instances last season. You know, we get it, heat at the moment and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, it's about respect. You know, other sports you watch, particularly rugby, you know, players have the respect of the official every time. Yes, I know they're mic'd up, but you know, whenever I've seen a rugby game or other sports, you know, the officials are respected. But football, that's never, well, I would say never. I think it used to be a case because referees used to have a respect of players, but I don't know quite when it went out the window. So yeah, I'm all for those. I'm not sure about the goalkeeper sportsmanship one. Obviously, the penalty taker has, you know, a fair chunk of advantage anyway. So it's not as if goalkeepers are doing that much. But yeah, that's fine. It's not a big deal. The extra time, I thought we were going to have that last season, to be honest, after the World Cup. So the World Cup showed us exactly how much time is being lost in games. And I thought that was a really good thing. And obviously, last season, we had a few areas where I think the Premier League came out with some details around how much time was being lost in games. I think it's probably the season before. So I think this is a really good one. But obviously, if you're going to games like I do, you're not going to quite know when you're going to be able to leave the ground to get your train home. Let's face it, or get that pint in the pub. So you know, you could be another 20 minutes, half an hour later leaving games. But it's, you know, it's just how it is, and you want to see the ball, you know, ball on the pitch more often. The time wasting rule, I think, is quite an interesting one. I was watching the game earlier, and they were talking it through about where players, you know, potentially, I'm not saying players feign injury. I think we know players feign injury, you know, to stop the game, stop the flow of the game, that kind of stuff. That sort of thing is really frustrating for fans to watch, and obviously the opposition as well. So I'm interested to see how well it's implemented across the season, because obviously officials have enough to do, don't they? Let's face it. And I think the etiquette one, you know, not crowning the referee, that's obviously going to help. But I think that's been needed for some time. So, yeah, interesting. And obviously the five Champions League spots, that's going to make the Premier League even more competitive. If it ever needs to be more competitive than it already is, I guess, you know, in a way, you know, you've got teams, you know, teams' eyes would be lighting up at the five Champions League spots now. You know, you're looking at the likes of Chelsea, Spurs, and, you know, you could probably add the likes of, you know, probably Aston Villa and Brighton and Brentford if they continue their recent trajectory into that kind of area as well. So yeah, I think they're all valid. I think they're all very interesting. I'm very interested to see how they all get adopted across the course of the season and how long it stays, you know, how long referees adhere to all of this, because I think we had a few instances a few years ago where they adopted some new rules. I can't remember what it was, but they kind of, you know, went out the window quite quickly after like four or five games of the season. But I'm certainly interested to see how.
After Eric Dyer, when he was facing the opposite direction and they gave a penalty and then the next week they changed it.
Was it shirt pulling as well in the penalty area? I think it was things like that as well. Because I think Mike Dean gave like two penalties in the first game of the season, or maybe three. I can't. It vaguely rings a bell that happening. But so from that point of view, it's going to be interesting to see if it continues across the course of the season or whether it kind of fades away or that kind of stuff. Particularly crowd and the referee, because footballers are footballers, aren't they? Creatures of habit, and they've been allowed to do it for so long. So I'm certainly intrigued to see how it's gonna pan out across the season. But the five Champions League spots is a really interesting one, because obviously, you know, makes it a lot more competitive as well, the Premier League. So, yeah, looking forward to that.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. And I think any rule that directly affects Eric Dyer is one that we should watch very, very carefully. I mean, I think the etiquette rule changes that you mentioned, Kev, that actually impact on the playing of the game. I mean, they just seem basic common sense, and maybe those are things that arguably should be already, you know, being enforced. I think, as Jay hinted at, the most important thing is that we have consistency in how those rules are implemented, and for the players to quickly get used to what's expected of them under new circumstances. I like the World Cup style, extra time, as Jay mentioned. You know, it's definitely for the good. Anything that brings more ball and play time and action into the game, I think, is a good thing. But the I'll differ, I think, slightly from Jay on the five Champions League spots, because I think structurally I worry that increasing the Champions League spots will basically turn out to be a way of further keeping the financial resources among the universe of already wealthy teams. And I know that kind of sounds counterintuitive, because technically, if you're expanding access, you expect the pie to be divided among more teams. But I think you have to be a pretty wealthy team to be able to compete across a complete season to a point where you're in the mix for the top six, not just the top four anymore. I mean, obviously, it was great to see Brighton get into Europe, just as it was, you know, with Burnley a few seasons ago. But the real test for those teams, I think, is how does a European campaign at whatever level, how does that affect their competitiveness in the Premier League season that runs alongside? So I think teams like those would need resources, the sort of resources that come from regularly appearing in Europe, not just as a one-off. And actually, once you narrow it down specifically in the Champions League, in order to consolidate a position as one of the wealthier teams, because it's essentially just the winners continue to win. And again, as we've talked about on occasion, Kev, it's like, once we scrapped the European Cup and moved to a situation where you could be as wealthy as the team that win your league by finishing fourth, then, all the context went out the window. But I think, as I say, I'm slightly worried that it'll consolidate wealth within a group of teams who are already pretty wealthy. And the gap, I think, between that financial gap between teams that are regularly in Europe, regularly in the Champions League, and those who aren't, those who do it as a one-off, is still pretty wide.
Yeah, a lot of good points made by both of you there. It will be fascinating to see how that all works. And like I said, it isn't official yet, because technically the coefficients could change throughout this European campaign. But it's pretty likely. And then obviously we'll see and feel the effects from there. But it is fascinating in a league with a air quotes big six having five spots. And then, like you were mentioning, Jay, having the likes of Brighton and Villa. Maybe Brentford will take a step back with no Tony. But Newcastle obviously ascended massively last season. It's gonna be really interesting, but I do agree, Steve. I think it'll establish something.
I think it's interesting you were saying there, Steve, about, you know, the likelihood that it will just be the richer clubs getting richer, you know, through qualifying for European competition. But I've noticed a distinct change in the way that Brighton are adopting, just in terms of their transfer market activities this summer. It's been very different to previous years. They're spending money. They're bringing in players of experience. They're looking to make that change, to kind of make themselves, prepare themselves for that kind of push, which, yeah, you know, I hope so. I hate to say it, because they're our rivals, but you have to kind of, you know, nod your head to them and think, well, they're giving it a go, and you just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, West Ham struggled last season with their long season in the Conference League, but they ended up winning it. So, you know, I speak to a lot of West Ham fans, and, you know, they're happy they won it and stayed up, you know, but that shows the challenge that these teams will have, because it's a long season if you are going to go deep in such a competition. And these clubs, like you said, you know, compared to the top six in this country, just don't have the squad capabilities to challenge on those fronts. And it's something the teams have to learn to do over a course of seasons. But it's certainly interesting to watch if things change, for sure.
And it's definitely a better option than having something like the Super League that doesn't have a competitive aspect to it. Mm.
Mm. Oh, agreed. Right. Yeah, where there was like no promotion or relegation. What a weird like month that was. We'll move from there to talking about something that I don't particularly want to, which harkens back to one of the first ever episodes of the show. As we said earlier, 10 years ago, one of the first episodes we ever had, Jay was on, was about whether or not Gareth Bale would be staying at Tottenham. And I went on a pretty long defense of why I thought he would, and then he transferred to Real Madrid the next day. So, a decade later...
We're doing this all again, Kev.
Yeah, at risk of making the same mistake. What do you guys think will happen with the Harry Kane situation? Obviously, Bayern Munich set a deadline and a new bid on Friday, and Levy promptly flew away to Miami to not deal with it, which, if I could do that every time I had a deadline at work, would be a really fascinating solution to something like that. But allegedly, the totality of the offer would be more than £100 million, which is always what we assumed would be Levy's number. So with that and his four goals in a friendly against Shakhtar Donetsk today in mind, what do you think Levy will do? Do you think he'll take up this offer from Bayern Munich and then use that money to reinvest in the squad? Do you think he'll end up keeping Kane, thinking he can convince him, thinking maybe Spurs can get into that top five if all five are indeed Champions League places? What do you think he'll do, and what do you think you'd do?
Tough one, isn't it? If I was Harry Kane, and I'm not, and I'm not a Spurs fan, but there is this thought process that he would win things at Bayern Munich before he would at Spurs. I know that might sound painful to some Spurs fans, but we're yet to see what Postecoglou will do with, you know, now he's manager. That's certainly a fascinating aspect of Spurs' new season. But, you know, losing Harry Kane at this point kind of hinders him a fair bit, doesn't it? Let's face it. But, you know, that sort of money on the table. Bayern Munich are looking for a striker to replace Lewandowski. They edged the Bundesliga last season, you know, and that proved that, you know, they weren't as strong as they have been in previous seasons. You know, without the likes of Lewandowski, you know, they need that main striker. And Harry Kane just fits the bill, doesn't he? For me, he fits the bill for somebody, for Manchester United and also Bayern Munich. I think Harry Kane should go to Bayern Munich and win things and obviously go deep in the Champions League, which they generally always mostly do. It'd be a fresh challenge for him, England captain being out in Germany, playing for one of the top sides. I'm not saying Spurs aren't the top side, but, you know, he's given his all for Spurs, isn't he, in his time there. And this is just a view from looking in. Whether Levy will do it, I don't know. Maybe I don't know if the money is an issue for him. It sounds a bit more complicated than what we're making it, to be quite honest, whether it's Harry Kane's decision or Daniel Levy's. But personally, I like to see him go and be challenged in the Bayern Munich side. He was slotting perfectly. I really do think I watch a lot of Bundesliga, and he went perfect. And they'd walk the Bundesliga again, to be quite honest with you, if he was there, scoring goals like he does in the Premier League. It's not quite as competitive as the Premier League. Well, it's not as competitive, let's face it. But with a player striker, you know, of the caliber of Lewandowski that they had before, you know, they'll go back to, you know, walking that league by the start of April probably anyway. So I think he should go. It'd be interesting to see him go. What Spurs do in terms of replacing him, that's a difficulty, isn't it? Season starts next Saturday. Obviously, the transfer window's open, you know. And like Kev said, Gareth Bale situation happened right before the season, didn't it? So, yeah, it's such a difficult one. From a neutral perspective, I would like to see Harry Kane go and win things, even if it is in the Bundesliga. But yeah, I'm interested to hear your guys' thoughts. Obviously, being Spurs fans makes it a little bit close to home. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, I agree with all that. You can't really argue against that, Jay. Although 10 years ago, Gareth Bale was probably thinking, you know, that Kevin De Vries, I'll show him. And that probably that was the tipping point, I think, for him. I didn't see the Shakhtar game this morning, but you know, after the stories of, you know, Harry waving to the crowd, it sounds like, you know, if this or the upcoming friendly against Barcelona, if that's going to be his last game for us, then he's at least ready for the season to start, you know, whatever shirt he ends up wearing. And I think, like the rest of us, he just wants to have the whole thing resolved. And but I thought it was interesting for Ange to say in his post game quotes that today shows that Harry is, quote, invested in what our club is doing. I think that might turn out to be a bit premature, Ange, to be honest with you. And I think by this stage, as Jay said, Harry's basically invested in Harry, and who can blame him? You know, if you think he was going to stay but not sign a new contract, you'd have to wonder whether we'd actually be any better off as a team, knowing that he was leaving with possibly the only thing to show for next season, then, you know, being maybe getting us in the European campaign that he won't be there to play in. So it seems like this is the perfect moment, I think, for Spurs fans to realize that we're moving into a new phase across the board, and they're probably, at least with some resources from Harry Sale, and I'm not sure, you know, obviously expecting the entirety of any income to be reinvested the way our management is probably high hopes, but at least we'd get to start to build something in the new coach's image. But the problem is we don't know what that is yet. And after, you know, after what Harry has done for Spurs and the excitement that he has given us as fans who pay to watch him, and that's the interesting thing. I think none of us would deny him the chance to decide how he spends the rest of his playing career. I mean, like Bale, like you mentioned, Kev, like when Bale left us, I'll just be glad to have seen him in a Spurs shirt at all, to be honest. And I wish him nothing but success wherever he ends up playing next season. But there are bigger questions. If we're a serious football club, and we have to remind ourselves sometimes that question has to be asked, we'll have contingency plans in place for either if he stays or if he goes. But so far, there's precious little indication that our plan for that latter situation, if we have to start the season without Harry, there's little sign that extends much beyond James Maddison, who, you know, after all, don't forget, may have actually signed with the expectation he'd been playing alongside Harry. And Richarlison, poor old Richarlison, who seems to be seen as the perpetual fallback that we all maybe thought he was when we signed him. So I think the only thing you can sort of count on are these two sort of presumptions, Kev, that the club were never going to risk letting him walk away for free. And ideally, they don't want him playing for another club in England, although I think that's slightly less of a consideration than the first one. So the Bayern scenario seems to, you know, as Jay says, seems to tick all the boxes on both sides of the equation. And if that's the outcome Harry wants, then it'll probably happen. And going back to your Bale reference again, it sounds like we'll find out one way or another in the next couple of days. So fingers crossed.
Steve, I've got a couple of questions for you. And to you, Kev, as Spurs fans, it's two questions really. How do you replace somebody like Harry Kane?
Yeah.
And I mean that's such an open ended question anyway. But and the other question is, you know, getting to this point, particularly in this season where the season starts next Saturday. But you know, over the longer term, perhaps you could have cashed in on Harry Kane last season. Perhaps maybe the deal wasn't there or whatever. But are you annoyed at the club for letting the club get in this position? Because you said about being, you know, Tottenham being questioning whether they're actually a serious club, but you clearly are, because you know you got an amazing stadium that's been invested in, and obviously NFL helped with that, you know, a fair chunk. But you got an amazing stadium. You've invested into the future. Players aren't always the future, because you know players come and go at clubs, right? Aren't they? So, but yeah, does it annoy you that the club, you know, has kind of ended up in this position?
Yeah, absolutely, Jay. I mean, you know, there's the old saying about Harvard University is that it's a hedge fund with a nice library attached. And we're at the point where we're becoming one of the best venues, not just sporting venues, but, you know, we saw the Beyonce concerts that we had recently, one of the best venues in the UK with a sort of middling, fair to middling football team attached to it. And that has worried me, that our ambition in terms of what the product that we put on the field has not matched the ambition to create the infrastructure around it, unfortunately. Your initial point, how do you replace Harry Kane? You don't. You rebuild. You try and say, well, okay, who have we got in our squad at the moment who can, you know, lead the line? And really, the only one is Richarlison, unfortunately, and he's been shown to be inconsistent so far. I don't know if his mindset would be different if he knew he was starting every week. I think he needs a little bit of competition. Again, just to go back to the idea of, you know, if we do end up selling Harry for whatever the end amount is, how much of that does get reinvested? And, you know, there are other parts of the squad that need shoring up. And it seems like we're moving on at least getting at least one central defender, which we desperately need. But the short answer is you don't replace someone like Harry. You can't go out and get another Erling Haaland. You don't do it. And you certainly wouldn't do it for 100 million.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's Amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah. No fair points. I mean, I can kind of compare this perhaps to a lower ebb where we've had the Wilfried Zaha situation. You know, Wilf been at the club for, well, he had that little stint at United, of course, but he came back and he's been at the club for so many years and has been, I don't know, you would call it a face of the franchise, wouldn't you, if you're talking about American sport, you know, for several years now. And to get to the point where, you know, Palace have been pretty shrewd in that actually losing Wilf like we just have, we're probably in the best ever position to lose him in terms of how the recruitment's been in the last 2 years. And it's almost been, you know, work in progress in getting the likes of Elise in, getting the likes of Eze in and kind of bringing that talent through at the club so that we are in that position. So I almost value the foresight of the club into changing their approach in the transfer window to allow that to happen. And hopefully, fingers crossed, we're going into a season now without Will for the first time, well, since the first season we came up when he went to United. So it's going to be weird, yeah. But actually there has been a plan in place for that eventuality to happen. And it has. So, you know, the proof is going to be in the pudding for the season, at least anyway. But it's quite interesting to compare the two.
Oh, it absolutely is. And I think every club is sort of looking at, well, who could we least afford to lose and what's our contingency plan for replacing them? And actually, just, you know, talking of American sports, if you think back to the movie Moneyball, when the Oakland A's lost Jason Giambi, they didn't try to replace him. They replaced him in the aggregate because they looked for other contributions that make up or, you know, the 30 goals or the, you know, whatever the number of home runs he hit. And so in a way, we're going to need Son to step up this season. We're going to need, if it is Richarlison, if Richarlison is going to lead the line, we're going to need a certain expectation of his contribution. Kulusevski is the same thing. Yeah. And also, I mean, having Madison helps, but I wonder, as I sort of said in my original response to Kevin, I wonder how much was going through Madison's head that he was going to be playing alongside Harry for at least another season, and whether that sort of changed his mindset now. But yeah, I don't think you can replace Harry without doing it in the aggregate.
Yeah, I mean, there was that year where Kane finished with both the most goals and the most assists. It's two players. He's at least two players that you have to try to replace. And you could argue that in theory, Madison is the creative half.
Well, the thing was, when Eriksen left, Kane basically replaced Eriksen as well as being the striker. He would very frequently drop back into that Eriksen role. And now Madison's the first, and I love Madison, by the way. I think he's probably the most talented and naturally gifted English midfielder at the moment. So I'm glad we got him. But that's our first player that we brought in to replace Eriksen.
Yep. True. Yeah, it's going to be really fascinating to see what happens. I personally would rather have Harry Kane than 100 million on the spreadsheets. But
you're not Daniel Levy, mate.
I'm not, but I do think that this decision will ultimately come down to Levy's ego versus his head. And I do not know which one will win this time. But if I picked one, the opposite would be what happens in 2 or 3 days. So he's going to be sold. in my one vain attempt to be able to see him at Spurs for another year.
One more thing, Kevin. I agree with you. But given we had that sort of scare a year ago when he almost went to Man City, that should have been a wake-up call. That should have been a wake-up call for the management to basically say, and if we keep him for another season and he doesn't sign a contract and he walks away for nothing at the end of the season, we still won't have a contingency plan in place. We still won't.
I think the contingency was Conte will be here forever and be elite and will win titles. though that may not have been well thought through or what happened. but yeah, and I think it was 2 years ago. Because wasn't that the Jose off season?
Which
was why he wanted to leave then, was because it took us like 3 months to announce a manager and then it was Nuno. And he was like, yeah, I'm out. Which I think is why you're hearing reports that like, if we were top four in the first half of the season, would that be enough to convince him to sign in December before then? But the fact that he ever got to the last year of his contract is definitely a failure. Exactly. Why you don't go the day after you secure Champions League football, after your first half season of Antonio Conte, say, look at what we're building and add an extra year. I think that was the failure point for sure.
No, totally. I mean, that window just after Conte unexpectedly got us into the Champions League, mm-hmm. that window was missed by pretty much everyone in the equation, because I'm sure if you asked Enoch and Levy, now, if you're going to sell the team, your value has only gone down since that.
Yep, undoubtedly. As is Kane's value, even though he's been better and better, he's years older and also has just the 1 year left on his contract. So yeah, definitely agree there. We do need to move on though to what we do every year, the week before the season starts, which is get into some predictions. We've already mentioned some of the teams we think will be in the European places, but let's start off with the title. Are we thinking that City are going to cruise to, what would it be, their fourth in a row? Or are we thinking a club like Arsenal or rebuilding Manchester United? Who do we think is going to ultimately lift the Premier League trophy come the end of the season?
I mean, you can't put it past City at the moment, can you? But you know, I'm fascinated by Arsenal in terms of their approach this summer. It's very unlike Arsenal. Obviously, they had a great season last season. Yes, you know, the media have been hounding them for falling away, but I think the way that the season worked out and the way that City always had games in hand, I think it was always going to happen at some point. But yeah, I'm impressed with how Arsenal have kind of looked at that and thought, right, Arteta's done a great job getting us into that position where actually they could have won the title if they had one or two different players, i.e. centre-back coverage, you know, perhaps. But that's all water under the bridge now, isn't it? So, yeah, I'm fascinated by how Arsenal are going to perform this season with really strong additions, which makes them stronger than last season, which gives them more options as well. So, yeah, fascinated by them. Chelsea, I'm really fascinated with this season. I really am, because obviously a lot of change, both personnel and obviously manager as well. It's something about Pochettino that I really like. I can't actually put my finger on it, whether it's just that he comes across as a nice guy or a decent... I don't know what it is, but I liked him when he was at Spurs. You guys probably did as well. Jury's probably out on him at PSG, because like, it's one of those jobs, isn't it, really? So, yeah, I'm interested to see what he does at Chelsea. Obviously, he sounds very much like his hands are tied in terms of, you know, transfers. He's got another owner there at the club, which seems to want to, you know, play with his toy and buy all the new additions. But, you know, in terms of their players that they have and they've brought together this season, I'm fascinated to see how they get on this season with, you know, I think that's the team that have had the biggest overhaul going into the season. So that's going to be really interesting for me. Elsewhere, United, I don't know if they're going to be challenging. I mean, they've made some, you know, decent acquisitions, and the striker from Atalanta, if he hits the ground running, you know, could be what they needed up front, but that remains to be seen. I think there's so many question marks out there just in terms of new players, new additions coming in and change at different clubs. I can see Arsenal challenging City this season again. I think it may even be closer than it was last season, because I think Arsenal have smelt that, tasted it, and want more, which is why they've gone out in the market and meant business, pretty much. Liverpool, I just don't know about them, really. I think they're a team in transition a little bit. They're still a good side, but whether, you know, maybe it's a good thing for them that the top five will be Champions League places, perhaps. I don't really see them challenging this season for the title, at least. But I think it's going to be a queue up there. I think it's going to be closer between, you know, six or seven different sides. Whether there's going to be any surprises this season, I think Villa could be a bit of a surprise. I'm not saying challenging. Newcastle are going to be decent again. I think they're just going to go from strength to strength every transfer window, every summer, with the money that's available to them. But they're doing things, in a kind of clever way, I think, Newcastle. So it's going to be interesting to see how they deal with the Champions League as well as, you know, domestic competition as well. I think it's going to be quite similar to last season with Arsenal, Man City. I think United probably in a third place fight out between Chelsea and maybe Liverpool. I'm not sure. And then obviously, I just don't know what to make of you guys this season, Spurs. You know, what if Harry Kane goes? You know, it could be a season of transition. I don't think a team like Villa are going to challenge for a top five spot. Might be surprised. They had a really strong end to the season. I like Unai Emery a lot. He's done a lot of good stuff. Probably went to Arsenal too soon, or at the wrong time, perhaps. You know, so he's doing really good stuff at Villa. So it wouldn't surprise me if they did something like Brighton did last season, or maybe even Newcastle. You never know. Newcastle, I think, could be up there challenging, but obviously, you know, they have the Champions League hindering them a little bit in terms of having to cope with that. But yeah, I it's intriguing. I think there's so much to look forward to this season. You know, I'm a Palace fan, it's, you know, I'm a football fan, so I like seeing a competitive division. I think it's going to be more competitive this season.
Yeah, I totally agree with all of that, actually. I think it'll probably be one of City, United or Arsenal that finishes up on top. But I mean, given what we've just seen. But I like Jay, I'm really looking forward to an entertaining season. I mean, I think Rice was a really excellent signing for Arsenal. Seems to be the piece that was missing for them. Newcastle, as you say, it's going to be interesting to see how they adapt to a Champions League campaign and alongside being competitive in the league. But again, that comes back to the resources argument that I was talking about in the previous question, is this idea that you have to be an already wealthy club, I think, to sustain a serious challenge across two of the major trophies or major tournaments. Chelsea, again, you know, you've pretty much said it all, Jay. I think Pochettino and what he has to do there is going to be the interesting story of the top five or six. And I think also that he has as big a job as Ange does with Spurs on basically, you know, weeding out his roster and deciding what his first choice 11 is going to be. I mean, I think as you say with Emery and Villa, Emery is a very talented manager and seems to have a decent scouting network as well going on. So yeah. I think if they can build on their performances in this past season, they'll be in that group of sort of, you know, Chelsea, Liverpool, hopefully Spurs, and Villa, I think, sort of challenging for that group behind the three: City, United, Arsenal, and Newcastle. But again, the big question mark is how Newcastle deal with a season in the Champions League. In terms of the relegation, I think we're probably on the same page. I mean, I certainly wouldn't predict who would go down before a ball's even been kicked. But you know, next week's the only time that every team's simultaneously in first and last place. So, you know, it's up to them what they do in the next 38 weeks after that. So like every other season, you know, the teams who come up will know how difficult it is for them. Just as every team that comes up knows that an awful lot is going to depend on their attitude and their preparation and their execution. And that goes for, you know, both on and off the field. They have to be managed and directed in a shrewd way to give themselves a fighting chance. I mean, having said that, it'll be great to see Luton back in the top flight. But, you know, honestly, who knows how their year is going to go? But I really wish them all the best, because that's essentially what the best of the pyramid is about. You know, get a team's on-field performance to mean more than what they do in the boardroom.
I think one of the interesting things, Steve, is that last season, I think, was the first time in quite a few seasons where the three teams that were promoted, none of them went down. Mm-hmm. So that made last season really interesting, because you look at the teams that have gone down last season. I don't think it's going to be the same this season. I think Luton and Sheffield United particularly are going to really struggle. And I don't mean that disrespectfully. I think, you know, there is an element of having a resource available, but you've got the other teams in there that have had longer, you know, a bit more experience in the top flight, perhaps, you know, like Bournemouth were touted to go straight back down last season. You know, the first season, you know, that's a hard one. Sometimes people would argue that, you know, the second season syndrome, you know, that's happened to a lot of clubs, in that, you know, perhaps you get a foothold and then the second season is even harder to stay up. So I think there's a definite groupings in the Premier League this season, you know, in terms of those challenging for European competition, then the midfield, and then you've got, you know, the teams that will probably be around the bottom six or seven teams. But I think a lot is to do with, you know, how well the clubs are managed. You know, I just hope that teams just give their managers a bit more time, because that seems to be getting a team up into the Premier League and then given five games, it's not gone well, off you go sort of thing. You know, that seems to be the way of things in the hope of chasing that, you know, that dream of staying in the Premier League and being that team. I never expected Palace to be still where we are now after, what, 10 seasons, heading into our 11th consecutive season, which is a record for us in the top flight. And that's before the Premier League started as well. Football was around before 92, by the way. it's certainly an interesting one. I think, yeah, like I say, Luton and Sheffield United, I think, I just don't see them. Probably Sheffield United have a fighting chance, but they haven't had a good summer. I know a couple of Sheffield United fans, and they've not done a lot in the transfer window. They've lost a couple of players, so they don't look in great shape heading into the season. So that's not great news for them. Luton obviously have a distraction of their ground, which doesn't help them, I don't think, really, just in terms of not being ready for the Premier League. Hopefully they're ready on the pitch, and I think some of that will go a long way for them. You know, we've seen the likes of Hull and Blackpool, you know, they're down before they've even started playing every season. Yes, Blackpool ended up going down, but they were top three after, what, five or six games, and they were flying, you know, just, you know, living off the back of that promotion. And I think some of these teams are onto a hide into nothing, but, you know, let's see them be entertained. Let's see them enjoy themselves. If they do go down, then fair play, they're giving it a good crack. But I think this Luton story is fascinating, absolutely fascinating. I think they were, if I remember rightly, they were in the old First Division the season that they were discussing the Premier League, and then they actually got relegated. So they were one of the founding members, but actually didn't play in it, which is crazy. And obviously seeing them go all the way down, dropping through the divisions like nobody's business, and for them to come back up, that's just a yeah, I don't think we've seen a story quite like that for a long time. So I'm looking forward to seeing them playing in the Premier League, seeing that name. I remember them in the old First Division with the Steam Brothers. Really enjoyable. Got to the League Cup finals, I think twice. Was it twice? Two seasons in a row, I think. I remember rightly, Luton getting to the finals. So, looking forward to seeing them in the Premier League. And it's been a long time coming for them. In terms of anybody else, yeah. I mean, you would probably list the same old names like, you know, Forest and Bournemouth, but they've had that extra season. It depends on, like I said before, that second season in syndrome, and that kicks in a little bit. Forest have had changes again this season, this summer. Great manager, though. I think that's a big part of Forest. Really good manager. Bournemouth, I think, very questionable about their manager. I don't know. They've made some moves in the transfer market, but I would pinpoint Bournemouth perhaps to struggle. And again, I'm really interested to see how West Ham approach the season, because obviously they finished just above the relegation zone last season. Obviously had the success in the Conference League, but they've lost Declan Rice, haven't replaced him, haven't brought in anybody, I think, so far, and all's not well down at the London Stadium. So there's them, and fascinated to see how Brighton get on this season. Mm-hmm. Brentford without Ivan Toney for a fair chunk of the season, see how they cope this season as well. So, and obviously, you know, Palace in the mix as well, which I'm not going to predict my own team whatsoever because I've got no idea. I don't want to tempt fate. I think the Premier League is going to be divided up into three segments pretty much this season, similar to what it was last season, but hopefully just as entertaining.
Yeah, I agree with absolutely all of that. I was slightly worried, though, Kev, that one of the stories that I read a couple of weeks ago was that Ange was among the favourites to be the first manager sacked. And I think that's simply because nobody really knows what what he might be capable of. So if that's any indication of how worried people are that Spurs might slip, then I think that's probably fair.
Yeah, I think your three segments of the table thing is probably the most appropriate way to put what's happening in the league now. Because basically, if you're in the top 10, you have a chance at European football. If you're in the top 6, you have a chance at Champions League. So, like, all of a sudden, it sends really far down. A very narrow window from, like, 11 to 14 is right now just air quotes mid-table. And anybody below that's fighting relegation. Yeah.
I think that's absolutely right. There's very few teams now, when you get to the last 3-4 weeks of the season, who have nothing to play for.
Which is great, ultimately. Mm-hmm. It just kind of disrupts kind of how I think we traditionally think about how seasons go and what certain placements mean. We're like 8th to 16th used to not matter, basically. Right. Now it's like 10th to 12th. Where people just might get stuck. But yeah, anyway, fascinating conversation, and we'll obviously see how all of those teams do. We'll just wrap up by asking about some of your club's summer signings. Any that you're particularly keeping an eye out for this coming season?
Well, in terms of our own clubs, Kev, is that?
In theory.
Well, funnily enough, so I did a piece a couple of days ago where I did a bit about transfers, and we've only signed one player. And that will change yesterday when one of the players that we've been scouting for 18 good months, probably nearly 2 years now, joined us from Flamengo in Brazil. Matheus Franca, who is an exciting 19-year-old Brazilian. I think Palace have done their due diligence on him, and he comes in, you know, it's going to take time to settle. He's 19-year-old. He's come from Brazil. He's going to take time to settle at Palace. But I'm hoping that he is the guy that lets us forget about Zaha moving on from Palace. He will need time. You know, we've got the likes of Eze and Elise, still fingers crossed on the last one, at the club. And we've got Ahamada, who's had a really good pre-season actually with us. He came in January and kind of, it didn't really get a run out in the side, only from the bench a few times, but he had a really good season for Stuttgart and really impressed in the Bundesliga. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can offer after, you know, a long pre-season with us. So hopefully he's going to be a good part of that. So, but yeah, Franke looks very exciting. Youngster, skillful, and hopefully he's the player we need just to liven things up a little bit after Wilf going, fingers crossed, and complement the likes of Eze and Elise. The other signing we had was Jefferson Lerma, who is a really good signing for us, actually. Free transfer. He left Bournemouth, didn't sign a new contract, and comes into Palace in the midfield and will really complement Decore in the midfield. So you've got the two players is sitting in front of the back four, allowing the likes of Eze and Elise and Ayew and Edouard to do their thing. And, you know, from an attacking sense. So I think that's a really strong addition. He's got Premier League experience. And I think that will prove invaluable after losing. Milivojevic left the club in the summer. So did James McArthur. They both left the summer. Didn't really feature an awful lot last season. But obviously getting on, and that's not kind of the player where, you know, we're looking at the club anymore. Still got the likes of Will Hughes in midfield as well. But yeah, Lerma and Franke are the two that have come in. We're expecting more the potential for us to sign a wing-back stroke midfielder from Chelsea on loan during the course of this week is due to happen, and maybe one other. But we're looking for a striker. Edouard, I want to see us given a go up front. There's rumours that we're looking at a few Championship strikers at the moment. Because Jean-Philippe Mateta just isn't the deal. He scored some important goals for us, but not enough. And, you know, him and Edouard kind of have kind of replaced each other at different times. But I want Edouard to be given that role and just give him a run in the team and give him that confidence. He scored a few goals in that 10-game stint that Hodgson came back for in the last season, which would be good. But he needs a bit of competition. So hopefully we can get somebody to come in and maybe let Mateta go off somewhere else and start afresh. But two signings for us. And looking forward to seeing them both. Hopefully it's going to be one or two more before the season starts.
Well, Kev, I think appropriately enough for the 10th anniversary season of your show, it looks like you'll get another VDV to cheer for. and Mickey van de Ven, he comes with a huge expectation. And, you know, all of us have only seen him play on YouTube, and we're, you know, taken aback by how fast he is, but the proof is going to be in the eating of sort of moving from the Bundesliga to the Premiership. So, and also Tapsoba looks good, but really, who knows where we stand on that signing? I mean, we've all heard, you know, throughout the whole process here that it was going to be one or other rather than both of them. So really, who knows? I mean, Ashley Phillips from Blackburn, I think, looks like a really very promising young player. But then, of course, so did Jed Spence. So an awful lot is going to depend on, you know, how they're managed within the system and what that what the outcome of that is. I think Manor Solomon will turn out to be a really good squad pickup for us. I've liked what I've seen of him especially when he comes off the bench. He gives us I think a good option off the bench, good cover for Son and Kulusevski. So I like him very much. But I think like Ange, we're all going to have to figure out what our potentially strongest first 11 is going to be. Starting at the back, I mean, anyone you'd bring in after Hugo Lloris, I mean, is like a downgrade. And I don't mean to be critical of Vicario, but whether Vicario is the man to take over from Hugo in the long term, we're just going to have to wait and see. I think it's very possible, transfers to, you know, elsewhere, it's very possible that we might come to regret missing out on David Raya, especially if he ends up at a team that we would be challenging with for league places. So we'll wait and see. I'll give Vicario the benefit of the doubt for now, and we'll see how we go. I like the idea of Porro and Udogie together, especially as we were saying, with the sort of speed that VDV will bring to the defence. And of course, they always say that getting a long-term injured player back is like a new signing, but I think it's even better when it's someone like Bentancur. And I think there's no question that we missed him more than any other player last year. So I'm definitely excited to see him back in the starting lineup. But as we were talking about, Kev, I think looking in from the outside, we've learned very little, I think, in the preseason. It's not really we don't even get an accurate sense of the unity or togetherness of the group. That certainly hasn't come across, or how they react to Ange. So obviously everything in terms of coverage has been focused around the Harry situation, the uncertainty around that. But I think we're still in the situation that we were at the end of last season, where a big part of the issue of the roster is, you know, dealing with the players who were out on loan, dealing with the potential departures. That still needs to be resolved just as much as it did last season. So I think there's going to be a lot of interesting storylines, squad wise, over the next few weeks.
For sure. Yeah. Plenty to keep an eye on, and we'll obviously, pay attention to the players that you guys have mentioned there. We will wrap up the show for today there though. So if you guys would like to tell folks where they could find you or anything you're working on, now'd be a good time.
Yeah. Thanks, Kev. It's good to be on the, to kick off the 10th season. That's crazy. 10th season, 10 years is mad, but well done. Great achievement. I'm Jay. You can catch me at the Eagles Beak. We've got lots of content. I've had loads of content already actually kicking off. Well, Zaha kicked us off actually with our season. We weren't expecting to get back writing so soon, but we have. There's a lot of content on Eagles Beak. It will be throughout the season, so head on over to eaglesbeak.com. You can get us on all socials, and also if you want to catch my local sports show, it's a community radio sports show. You can get us on Meridian FM. You can get us on all socials, the Meridian SS.
Thanks again, Kev, for having me back on, and congratulations again on the 10th season. And thanks, Jay. That was a really good conversation, as it always is with you. I am Steve McGookin, and you can get me on Twitter at Steve McGookin, or if you want to follow my non-football work, you can get me at statesofplayproject.com.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Kevin DeVries. You can find me on Twitter at Kevroff. You can find the show at EPL Roundtable for as long as Twitter exists, or X, or whatever we're referring to that as these days. But of course, you can also just search EPL Roundtable and find the Acast links directly if for some reason that site does crash and burn in the near future. But an absolute pleasure chatting to both of you. Thanks again for coming on at some point over the last 10 years, Jay, for the last, the last 4 or 5 years. And folks at home, we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.